when you went election, and when you all organized the 52 and 56 elections, what was the method you concentrated on? Big public speeches or house-to-house campaigns?
You see, I couldn't answer that because I concentrated on the Muslims. As far as the Muslims are concerned, we couldn't do house-to-house. I couldn't do house-to-house as far as my part was, it was public meetings. And to put forward. And I was sought after because I could speak in Tamil among my contemporaries. At that time, I was perhaps the only fellow who could get up and talk in Tamil. Muslims didn't understand English. People like Raji Khalil and so on, they had to speak in English and get interpreters and so on. So I was quite safe because the Muslims are sort of, you know, God conscious. And any party where communism is allied, so it was very simple to argue the case for then at that time for the Muslim audience.
Now, the Muslim candidates you supported?
No, it is not Muslim candidates I supported, no.
Oh, I see.
You see, there are about, I think, 20-25 places where the Muslims can
swing.
So, I was sought after in those areas. You see? So, there the approach is very simple, but you had troubles like this. For example, I went to canvas. You see, at the end of a meeting or before the meeting, Muslims, you know, they feel more egalitarian attitude socially. So they come and tell you, ah, what is the use, you know, this man is hopeless, he has a DR, or that is full, he went and distributed lands to others, but he didn't, he treated them shabbily. And that type of complaint you get. Well, my answer was, we are fighting an election against communism, against this and against that. Now, this is a minor matter, but if you do elect him, now you come and tell me, and if our party gets into power, I will be able to help you. But if you go and elect the other party, you can't come to me. Because what can I do? That sort of thing. But by and large, it's a case of stating the case for the party from the Muslim point of view. And I sometimes feel that many of the speeches are still having the effect, I suppose.
What about funds? I know that there were lots of personally rich UNP members.
At that time it was all the job, no one knew what the funds were, but he used to collect money. And my wife from the boys are rich.
When you entered the civil service and, you know, after being it was some time, and you were looking back with hindsight, what would you say were its assets and shortcomings, as you knew it, between 35 and 48?
Well, assets, you see, it is a fine training on the whole in administration. And especially, you see, the elder civil servants of those days, you see, like an apprentice system, the old kind of apprentice system. Now I find so many seminars, you see, I do not know. There, you see, the numbers are small. The relationship was very personal. You could go and consult a person and do things. So I am afraid now, we are in a sort of interesting stage where, you see, it is not so mechanized and so academicized, you see. You find occasionally there's a school they are trying to organize. Then the numbers are very large. There the numbers are small. And as Mr. W. A. De Silva used to say, a chap enters at 22 where he thinks he has the brains because you get into civil service, the sort of a certificate that your intellectual or brain capacity is good, then of course that is one aspect. Next is you are given to do things, you know, big things, and then you cultivate a sense of responsibility, and that gives you confidence. And I think we are, you know, in the CAs, the vital difference between this ex-CCS men and the non-ex-CCS men is this kind of feeling of confidence that they have got as against the others. Otherwise, I suppose, intellectually, they may not be so inferior as civil servants sometimes try to make out. A man may be So it had those virtues. On the side of negative side, well, you know, as a historian, all that you find in these books. You see, we were trained to be very correct in regard to financial regulations and expenditure of money. To put it in a crude way, those who saved money were the best administrators then. Today, those who spend money should be the best administrators. It is this trouble that has taken place. There the emphasis was on conserving, very slow process of doing a thing, to be quite certain before you take the next step. And don't try to do jobs which at your pace you cannot complete. Today the whole thing is in the opposite direction. The demand from the people, development, all the pace is so different. And I think this is the vital difference. They have correctitude, slow movement, thoroughness. And then of course the civil service has said they paid more attention to the English language than to what they achieved. I have a feeling that way. Mm-hmm.
Did you feel that there was a kind of paternalistic spirit and a kind of elitist concept? You know?
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Oh, I think it persists. I have been doing both, the civil service and a little politics. The whole trouble is this. The civil servant thinks there are no other intelligent men than himself. I mean, put it in a very rough and really good enough for tape recording, but I wouldn't venture to say it in an article because you've got to qualify it. But by and large, the civil servant thought, well, there are no other intelligent people than us, which is not, it's a fallacy. They are intelligent people, there will be a lot of other intelligent people too. They never understood the politician's outlook and aspect. I was fortunate because my father was a local government politician throughout his life. And then Muslims have this advantage. This casteism of the civil service doesn't apply to us, you know, to a Muslim, to the same extent as others. Because here, our relations will be the same. I had to go and sit with the other five fellows, you know, around a plate and eat. But here, you see, pattern is slightly different. So, here the difficulty, there, when a politician asks something, your impulse is to refuse, because that was the sort of fashion. Here, it is now turning the opposite way, because otherwise your head might be chopped off and so on.
Nowadays. For instance, when you were a cadet and you saw the... You didn't have contact with the politicians, but you would have seen the GA and the AGA having dealings with the...
I belong to a period now, very interesting. Now, my GA was Hodgson, typical pre-Donomo type. But that was the Donomo period.
How would you describe the pre-Donomo type?
Typical paternalist Englishman who wanted to do a lot of good, you know, for the native, but was not prepared to accept that native is anything as a matter of right or as an... Not the same, but almost like the South African Bantustan, you know.
For instance, did he and whoever was your superior in Marthale tend to treat the local MPs with some sort of disdain?
Hodgson did, because he belonged to... But the next part, he depended on the personality. For example, if he was a powerful Ceylonese from a powerful family and who had affiliations, you know, straight with the minister, for example, one of Mr. Sennacher's relations, the MP may be a fellow, obscure fellow, or he may be a low-caste chap, this may be a Goigama chap, and see, it depends that way. Very often, the native or indigenous GA was also either married or, and so on. Because my Indian was very different in the sense I was the only Muslim. There's no question of caste. I had no relations.
No, I was thinking of the European, say, AGA at Marthale. What was his attitude to the local MP?
You see, still the planters, you know, although theoretically their rights had disappeared, they were still powerful. Now, during the time I was in Kandy, the planters' Raj still was there, although it should have gone. So it was a phase later.
So, it would be correct.
Yeah, I remember. Now, I used to go with Hodgson on circuit. But naturally, he will have a cup of tea in a planter's house or a lunch. Mm-hmm. And then, if he had a problem, he would say, what's happening to this? You see, Mm-hmm. All unwritten portions of history.
Would it be correct to say then that the spirit of the service then was that of impersonal guardianship? Or it approached that?
You see, it would be very interesting for you to study the Dhanamoha period, because there you are in a transitional period.
Yes.
Well, some of the far-sighted indigenous GAs and AGAs were able to sense that the impersonal guardianship was over. Therefore, some of them tended to become, in a subtle way, stooges of the new guardians. Others, like Edmund Rodrigo, were still obstinately clinging to the old pattern. Others thinking that the civil servants of old would be replaced by indigenous civil servants. So, I don't want to go into personalities. Each fellow solved this problem in his own way. Some found themselves misfit, others had a chameleon-like adaptability, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a very interesting period, and also it depended on areas. Now, all my experience is Kandy.
Mm-hmm.
Kandy was very conservative, and planters were most influential there. How it would be in Mana district, I wouldn't say.
Take a European AG, or GA.
By the way, why don't you put a questionnaire now and collect from various people? Now you have gone persons. Now, if you want to do it in the way that, if I may suggest. See, Mana should have been different, you know.
Okay.
I now begin to think, just now I think, whether you shouldn't divide it into different areas. Planter estates dominated area, one. You think of it. I think it must be fundamentally different. Eastern province.
No,
North and South, Eastern province, estate-dominated place.
Yes, agreed. Now take an estate area, or even any other district where an AGA or GA was faced with an administrative problem between an European on the one side and a Ceylonese on the other. How fair was it?
During the Dhanamoha period, some of the Ceylonese AGs were asserting themselves against the white GA and the planter because they knew.
No, I was thinking of the case of a white GA faced with such a case.
White GA, the really independent chap who felt he couldn't adapt, he ran away and became governor of some Tanganyika or somewhere. The other fellow who was not persona grata with the colonial office, but I'm afraid he became a cringer almost. One or two instances where they would do it because they never cared. Now what the devil does it matter? I mean, if the MP wants a cottage hospital to be built here, just as some of our fellows do, I mean, after all, it is his baby, what do I care?
Mm-hmm. No, I was thinking whether the European age, say Hodgson,
yes.
Would he tend to favor the plant? Would he?
Oh yes, Hodgson is a very peculiar case because he was at the tail end of his career.
Mm-hmm.
And all his friends were planters. Probably his daughter married a planter and so on. So in his case, there would be no problem, no?
What was his attitude to the land development ordinance and things like that?
He wasn't very happy.
Mm-hmm.
But one good thing in the average English civil servant, I must say this to their credit, they had a sense of loyalty to the service. That is, well, if this is the policy of government, it's my duty. They wouldn't obstruct. They may not carry it out enthusiastically, there is too much to expect of them. But they wouldn't obstruct it. But that is also part of the fact that they are white. Now take a native chap. Now he will obstruct because if he feels that that policy is mad, very difficult for him. In fact, one of the reasons why I am happy I left the civil service is I have strong views on matters. And if you are a Ceylonese, you have strong views. Now you might feel Minister so-and-so is really mad in this scheme. Now what I want to do, you can't apply that principle of objectivity and detachment if you are a strong-willed person. And that's why I don't regret it. Some people say, why you would be the permanent secretary today? So I tell myself, what are you going to do as permanent secretary? I don't know. Feel much happy.
Did you feel that the Europeans whom you came into contact with in those days had any sense of mission? Or was it just a job which they were trying to do?
Well, I was just writing an article or reading somewhere. The British Empire came to crash not because of anything else. They lost the sense of mission.
You think they didn't have it? They just...
You see, what I think is, I mean, I was reading this and quite a lot of books on this thing.
So, you know, I'm interested in the period 1844 to 1914. So if I am asked, isolate and tell me just one cause why the British Empire, the sunset in spite of Cicero Rhodes. I was writing in Tamil about Cicero Rhodes, you know, a travelogue article, but you know, I was hunting for that all civilized men have equal rights or some present thing like that. So I begin to think, the moment rationalism became the order of the day in England, and the civil servants started doubting whether Christianity is a wonderful thing, I think that's the day that the British Empire said. Because earlier, they felt, you know, that otherwise, how can those fellows come and live in these awful places, you see, forsaking everything. So I have a feeling that once they lost the mission, they were prepared to cringe. I don't want to tell you names, because some of them must be living. Under the Donamo scheme, under powerful ministers, lo and behold, these wonderful fellows, you see, who are ruling empires, became absolute cringes, and that shows, you see.
Incidentally, I meant to ask you something. Did W. A. de Silva have much friction with the three officers of state?
Yes, he hated them, but fortunately, his frictions, you see, his department was civilized.
Mm-hmm.
The, you know, the medical department.
Yes,
but I have referred to the fact that he put up a fight and got a silence. You read back my article, you will find that when the colonial office wanted to send a white man to succeed Dr. Bradcliffe, he resisted it. So that was the only friction, Other frictions were, well, you see, this was a department where the white man was not involved.
No, I was wondering in outside relations, say, with the...
Yes, these are fellows, Sena Nayakappan, W. de Silva, Sir Baran, were people who always wanted the British to go.
Mm-hmm.
As against, say, Sir Martin Marka or T.B. Jaya or, you know, the Obeah Sekaras and so on, they were never so foresight. These were Buddhist leaders.
Mm-hmm. Coming back to the civil service, when you went in, did you have considered this a sense of mission, or was it just also a rather normal
job? In my case, it was a sense of mission, and this to my father. I was telling somebody this morning, see, I got a scholarship to Cambridge to do tripos. Well, Peggy wanted me to come as lecturer. I knew that without a first class, people always say you're a second class. So I said, yes, I hope so, and so on. But I thought, unless I got a first class in Cambridge, which I thought was not possible. So I wanted to be a lawyer. Then I went to my father and said, he was a proctor, you know.
Uh-huh.
I said, give me 3,000 rupees, I want to do barrister, 3,000 or 4,000 rupees. He said, what is the meaning of all this nonsense? Now there is not a single Muslim civil servant, everybody says you are the only person who is capable of getting through. I was a twofold. One is I wanted to be a lawyer and earn a lot of money, and I thought that there my talent lay, civil law and appeal court. I had a little glamour, H.P. Pereira and that sort of thing. Two, I thought, well, by some accident I got a scholarship, now why do I go and make a mess of it by getting the 26th place in the civil service? So many things got together. I said, I am not sitting for the civil. Then he roundly scolded me, and then he said, oh, you owe it a duty to the Muslim community. So there was a sense of mission to the extent that when all the and then, you know, the other Muslims also said, here you are the first civil servant. So there was a little sense of mission in a communal way. But I was one of those fellows who never thought very highly of the civil service from my young days. Gandhi. You will see all those little things. If you read my book once again, you will find my influences are very different from the civil servants whom you would meet or you have met.
Uh-huh.
Unless you meet the fellows now. You see, my background is entirely different. My ambitions are different. Now, I'll tell you, L. Jayasundara. You might go and have a chat with him. His father was a Kachari Mudaliar. His ambition was, beyond and all of his life, that his son should be a civil servant. Actually, came eighth. No, eighth or ninth. Seven were advertised. They got nine people because Vedaban wanted to help this fellow to get it. Yes, but think of this British Empire. The sun started setting on the day they thought that they lost that sense of mission. They became cynical, they became that, and they became this, you see. And I am a great believer in fanaticism, because Israelis wouldn't have won the war with
Within 6 days, if they didn't have fanaticism, unless the Arabs developed fanaticism. That is why I sometimes wonder whether the Americans finally will win any war, because you must develop. That is the only thing that will give you bravery. Maybe bad from either fanatic is on the opposite side of me, but the fact remains that, I may be using the wrong word, fanaticism, but whatever it is, that emotional fervor of something. I think the British lost.
From what you said, it would seem that the civil service as it existed then was not closely identified with the people.
You mean the Dunamo test?
Yes.
Because you see, the fellows who got in, the Silanis, they thought they were Pakasais. Okay, they were not history students, and even the history students didn't not have sufficient history sense to realize that. I had no difficulty in chucking the civil service because I knew that the mission I had, the literal mission, first Muslim, well, I had been first Muslim, so that was a great point in me. You know, curiously, no one was there till I left also. So I used to say, I must have obstructed the passage, the other fellows getting in. You know, the next Muslim civil servant. So, for 13 years, I was the first and only one. Mm-hmm.
No, but in recent years, you have seen this identification developing to some extent. But hasn't it meant the loss of other assets?
I don't know if there is identification. They now have to be specialized officers. I don't see any other role for the civil service except they are technical men, technical in a very broad sense, that is. Here is the policy, rural development and so on. See, personally, we have the, well, even the magic name has been abolished. I think that civil service is finished. How can it fit in? Today we have the permanent services. We should develop a category, a sort of elite and all that and all that, and the permanent services. I mean, when you go to a kachari, and with district councils, the whole thing, you can write the decline and fall of the civil service as soon as the district council will be disbanded.
Now,
that would be a nice title for you. I haven't the energy, I can only suggest the title. Decline and fall of the civil. Of course, in another sense, it is already fallen because the word CCS has been abolished.
Yes.
But no. One of the articles I intended writing, you know, I have desired to write it, but never. I can't sit down to it.
Now, the question of yourself in the field, for instance, your background, I mean, was somewhat urban and Western.
Me?
Yes.
No.
No?
You read my article on Vidyalayam, it's not. That is why I am a little strange.
No, but
when I finished all your interviews, you will find certain streaks of idiosyncrasies in me.
But
you also the background. No.
But isn't it somewhat Westernized? No, say take a Sinhalese area. You have a Sinhalese card.
Put it this way. If you take all those fellows who preceded up to my batch, I may be the least Westernized except by Jinnadas.
Mm-hmm.
Or he is from Horana, Buddhist.
Yes, but now since your background is a Muslim culture.
Muslim plus Hindu school,
yes.
Plus Gandhi.
So how could you establish a rapport when you were working with, say, a Sinhalese villager or Sinhalese townsman?
I won't have the time to develop that. I say I could have established a better rapport than the St. Thomas's educated Anglican Christian.
Yes, but not all of that.
If they were not all that, St. Thomas's Anglicanized. Yes, that's what I'm giving you the answer before you ask me. The St. Thomas's Anglicanized the Buddhist of India.
Mm-hmm.
Now we shall, you can. So then you must pardon me, I don't want to miss the mosque.
End of interview.